Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with another interview with a player from the Minnesota Twins' wonderful past. Today, we get a chance to spend time with switch-hitting catcher Tom Lundstedt. Tom played with the Chicago Cubs in 1973 and 1974 before being traded to the Minnesota Twins prior to the 1975 season. Tom played 18 games for the Twins in 1975 before walking away from baseball at 26 years of age. So let's see what Tom has to say. Tom, you were born in Davenport, Iowa, but you grew up in Mount Prospect, Illinois, I believe. What sports?
Yeah, my dad was with Arlington, International Harvester, and we traveled around a little bit while I was growing up. And then when I was in fifth grade, we moved to Chicago. He got transferred to the home office in Chicago, and I grew up in Arlington Heights, Illinois. And my dad used to take the commuter train into Chicago every day.
I see. What sports did you play in high school?
I played just the usual, football, basketball, and baseball. So we were busy all the time. And then in the summers, American Legion baseball.
Sure.
So we're playing something every day.
Sure. I think I read somewhere that Dave Kingman was from that same neck of the woods.
Yeah, Dave Kingman. I actually lived in Arlington Heights, but went to Prospect High School in Mount Prospect just because where the borders were. So Dave's a good friend of mine. Dave and I were teammates all through high school in basketball and, of course, in baseball. And Dave was a pitcher in high school. He was a great pitcher. He was a number two draft choice after high school as a pitcher.
Really?
Yep, and then he didn't sign, of course, and they went off to Southern Cal, and they made him into a hitter. He could hit him a mile. I remember one time in high school, he had a home run that traveled down a road, went over left field. We didn't have senses, so it went over the left fielder's head, went down a road, and one of our players' mother was driving to the game, saw a ball, and they rolling down the street, picked it up, and brought it to the game. That's how far it was.
That's a great story.
Yeah, he was something. He's still a friend of mine.
Yeah, he's kind of infamous here in Minneapolis because he hit that ball into the Metrodome ceiling and it never came down.
Right, I might be still up there. Maybe when the roof collapsed last year, maybe that ball came down. Dave was really something. In Chicago, you know, he played. I don't know for how many different teams, but yeah. For a while he played in Chicago, and he. He doesn't have a good reputation there. He wasn't friendly with the reporters. And he's a real good guy, you know. People just don't know him.
Mm-hmm.
But he can, he doesn't go out of his way to be friendly with the reporters. But some people in Chicago just hate him. And I remember being in Chicago maybe 10, 15 years ago, listening to the radio and on WGN, the big station like WCO,
sure.
They were talking about what a bum Kingman is and all that stuff. And a lady called in and said, "You don't know Dave Kingman. I know Dave Kingman. He's a good boy." What is my mother? So I drive in the car and said, "Hey, that's Mom."
That's strange. The Dodgers drafted you in the 65th round in 1967, but you didn't sign. Tell us about that.
Well, I was drafted way, way, way down there. I didn't even know it was a... I don't even think they still have 65 rounds, do they?
No, I don't think so.
But so I drafted out of high school. But I went to Michigan on a basketball scholarship. I was pretty good in basketball, so I could have gone a lot of places to play basketball. And so I went to University of Michigan on a basketball scholarship and played basketball and baseball there. And was recruited by Minnesota, Jerry Kindle. Now, you know Jerry Kindle, of course.
Sure, sure.
Jerry Kindle was the assistant basketball coach at University of Minnesota when I graduated from high school in 1967. And so Jerry was the assistant basketball coach, and I was recruited at Minnesota and came up and had a good basketball visit. But they didn't want me to play basketball and baseball. They wanted me to play basketball only. Well, I wanted to play both, and Michigan let me play both. And so I went there on a basketball scholarship, played both, and so that was a year-round thing, too. One of the coach at Michigan was a guy named Dave Strack, the basketball coach, and he picked me up at the Detroit airport and drove me from Detroit airport out to Ann Arbor, which is about miles or so on the interstate. And I was in the front seat, he's driving his car, and he said, "Watch this." And he hit this button on the car and took his foot off the accelerator. It's the first time I ever saw cruise control. I said, "Oh, man, I'm coming here."
That's cool.
This is great.
Yeah, and you know, that was going to be my next question is, how did you end up being a Wolverine there at Ann Arbor? And you were there for what, 2 years, 69 and 70?
No, I was there for 3 years. Back then, if you didn't sign out of high school, you went back in the draft pool, but you couldn't sign again until you were 21 and completed your third year of college. So I had 3 great years in Ann Arbor and played basketball and baseball my freshman and sophomore year. And then my junior year, I knew I probably could be a pretty high draft choice in baseball, so I concentrated just on baseball, switched my scholarship from basketball to baseball. So I didn't play basketball in my junior year.
You had what kind of basketball team did you guys have there?
We were middle of the pack. But my roommate at Michigan, I had two roommates. One was a guy named Dan Fife. And do you remember Dan Fife from the Twins?
I do, and that was going to be my next question about Dan.
Well, Danny and I are good friends, but our other roommate was Rudy Tomjanovich, who went on to basketball fame. And so Rudy and Dan and I were roommates our sophomore and junior year at Michigan. Rudy's 1 year older than we are, so I think Rudy was the number two draft choice in America the year he was a senior in college.
He was a great basketball player.
He was a great basketball player. And speaking of Minnesota, I remember the basketball team playing in Minnesota, and we got there the night before the game, a Saturday game, and we went to White Castle, and Rudy had 45 White Castle burgers. And the next day, scored 45 points.
Holy cow. That's amazing. The next question I was going to ask you was about Dan Fife, because he went on to pitch for the Twins for a short period of time himself.
Right. Dan was a good basket. He was playing basketball and baseball. Both of us were doing that. Dan's from a little town in Michigan, Clarkston, Michigan. And he was drafted in basketball and in baseball after his senior year. He stayed all 4 years. And never signed in basketball, but he signed with the Detroit Tigers and worked his way up through the minor leagues, and then he got traded from Detroit to the Twins for Jim Perry. And maybe there were other players involved, but I remember that real well, because I think he played his first year in the big leagues was the same as mine, 73.
Dan must have been a pretty good basketball player, because I think he started for Michigan for 3 years.
Yeah, he was a real good basketball player, real good basketball player, full floor leader, general type guy, strong. He was a good athlete all the way around. And I think he's back in Clarkston now, and is the coach of their high school basketball team.
Really?
I think so.
How good was your Michigan baseball team?
Michigan baseball was pretty good, although back in those days it was always Minnesota where they were the studs. They were the great teams. And so we had guys on our team that played in the big leagues. Elliot Maddox played for the Yankees for a while. A guy named Jim Burton was a great left-handed pitcher, a good friend of mine. And Burton's claim to fame, he pitched with Boston. And remember, was it the 76 Boston versus Cincinnati? Joe Morgan got a little loop hit to center field to win the game. Well, that was off Jim Burton. That's what he's famous or infamous for.
I don't remember him, but that's...
Yeah, left-handed pitcher. He's a good pitcher. We were playing at Michigan when... who was the guy at Minnesota? He was drafted in football, baseball, and hockey. I can't remember
his name.
Yeah, if you said his name, I'd remember. He was really a stud, you know, at Minnesota.
Well, you know, Dave Winfield played multiple sports.
Winfield's a little younger than we are, so I never played with Winfield. Although, probably my second year in professional baseball, I was playing, you know, I got drafted by the Cubs and signed with the Cubs. I was playing in their instructional league, and the Padres signed this kid, Dave Winfield, and he came right to the instructional league and tore it up. He was great. He was great. He was a shortstop. shortstop, I think. I think he was playing shortstop at that time.
He was doing some pitching at the university, too.
He's a great athlete, obviously.
Yeah, he sure was. One of those guys that went straight to the pros, didn't spend any time in the minors.
Never played a day in the minor leagues, I think that's right.
The Cubs drafted you in the first round in 1970, and I think 17th pick overall, and a few days later you signed to play pro ball. Tell us about that.
I got drafted by the Cubs, and see, I've grown up in Mount Prospect, Arlington Heights, so the Cubs were always my team, so to get drafted by the Cubs was great.
Yep.
And so then signed, and then head straight to Double-A. They put me in Double-A baseball right away. And it probably wasn't such a good idea. I was a little over my head. And still struggled that first year, but had a lot of fun. Learning your way around professional baseball. And then worked my way up to their minor league system.
Well, you were pretty big for a catcher. I mean, you're what, about 6'4"?
I'm 6'4". There were some Carlton Fiskas my same size. The Yankees had a catcher named Fran Healy, who I think is 6'6".
Because everybody says, you know, Joe Mauer at 6'5 is really too big to catch.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, it's a long way up. The first few days of spring training are a little tough, getting your legs used to it. But you see some big rangy catchers.
Yeah, yeah. You started working your way up through the Cubs minor league system, and then in 1973, you were hitting the cover off the ball in AAA Wichita. I think you had 11 home runs and a little over 300 at bats. What do you remember about that year in Wichita?
Oh, that was a great year. I had a real good year. I was a switch hitter. I started switch hitting the year before. And so that's a tough thing to learn, is to switch hit, to learn how to switch hit in professional baseball. But I did it. So played in Double-A in 72 and then made the Triple-A team in 73. And my roommate that year, well, we had he was just a great, great guy, Tony La Russa.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Tony's about 5 years older than I am, and he was kind of on his way down. And I was kind of on my way up or on my way sideways, wherever I was going. And Tony and I were roommates, and we just really hit it off. He's a smart guy, and Eric, you know, some of the old-time baseball, they didn't want you to read books and all this stuff. We once got fined for reading a book in the clubhouse. But Tony and I really, really had a good year that year. He was a great guy. And Tony, he was a great athlete out of Tampa. And he signed to play baseball before the draft existed. So when did the draft start? 1965, I think.
Yeah.
I think Rick Monday was the first player ever drafted, if I'm right. But anyway, Tony must have signed in 1963 or something, and he was a star athlete in high school. And when he graduated in high school, he walked across the stage at graduation, got his diploma, walked down the stairs, and at the bottom of the stairs, Charlie Finley was waiting with a contract.
Oh, wow.
Because he could have signed with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so Charlie Finley was literally there at the bottom of the stairs when Tony signed his contract. So Tony signed with the A's, and at that time, if you got whatever the amount of money was, I don't know what the amount was, if you got so much money, you had to stay in the big leagues for the first 2 years. So he sat on the bench for 2 years right out of high school with the Kansas City A's. And I said, oh, Tony, that must have been great. You know, you're in the big leagues. And he said it's the worst thing that ever happened to him because for 2 years he just sat there, didn't play.
Yeah. And Harmon Killebrew was kind of under that similar rule.
Yes.
He said the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Killebrew did all right, too, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did. But, you know, it's funny you should say that about La Russa because he seems to have the reputation as kind of a stuck-up snob.
He's not at all, though. I really, really like the guy. And, you know, he may have changed over the years dealing with the people he deals with, the reporters and so on. He's not. He's smart. He's multilingual. He speaks Spanish as well as English, which sure helps, you know, with all the players. You know, he can speak Spanish with the players whose first language is Spanish, and speak English with the players who are English. And, you know, he was using baseball then, John, as a summer job, and he was going to law school in the off seasons.
Yeah, and I understand he is a lawyer.
Yeah, he was going to law school. He never thought about managing. And then somehow I got brought up to the big leagues that year, 73. So, and Tony stayed in AAA, and got traded or signed with the White Sox and became good friends with Jerry Reinsdorf. And Reinsdorf gave him the managerial job when Tony was only, I don't know, young 30s, 34 or 3 or 5 or something like that. And then the rest is history.
And I'm sure he's going to go into the Hall of Fame as a manager.
Yeah, I think he's the third winning manager of all time.
Yeah, it's a lot of games.
Pretty amazing.
Later in 1973, the Cubs called you up to the big leagues, and in August 31, 1973, you made your major league debut at Three Rivers Stadium as the Cubs' starting catcher, and you were catching future Hall of Famer Ferguson Jenkins, I believe.
Yeah, that's the truth. I was playing in Wichita and had that good year, as you say, and I remember clearly we were playing a day game in Wichita, and the first inning of the first game, you know, first it was a doubleheader, I think. First inning of the first game, we gave up 9 runs in the first inning. The pitcher was terrible, left-handed pitcher, and a kid who just got brought up from Double A,
mm-hmm.
And he gave up 9 runs in the first inning. Jim Marshall was our manager, and Jim came out, you know, in the middle of the inning and said, "Hey, you know, what's going on here, Tom? What kind of stuff does he have?" And I said, "You know, I asked the center fielder. I haven't caught him." So that inning ended, and we run back to the dugout, and Jim Marshall, the manager, gave me the old hook finger and said, "Come here, come here." And he went down. I said, "Oh, man." He went down the tunnel underneath the stands. He said, "Follow me." And I'm thinking, "Oh, man, you know, come on." And he didn't crack a smile, nothing. And he goes into his office. He said, "Come in here." And I said, "Oh, I'm thinking, what's wrong?"
Yeah.
We got in his office, turned around, said, "Congratulations, kid, you're going to the big leagues. Take off your uniform. Here's the plane. You know, they just called you up." So I'll never forget that day. And then sat on the bench with the Cubs. But that was fun. It was great. And Fergie was terrific. I was brought up to the big leagues, and I remember I had in the minor leagues, you know, you're not getting many perks. I had a hole worn in my shoe, my spike. And Fergie gave me a pair of shoes and said, "I'm not pitching to a guy with a hole in his shoe."
What kind of a guy was Ferguson Jenkins?
Good guys. They were good guys. All of them. You see, I was on that team when it was Ron Santa was the third baseman, Don Kessinger, Glenn Deckert,
wow.
Billy Williams was the first baseman, Fergie Jenkins, Ken Holtzman, Randy Hundley was the number one catcher, Jose Cardinal, Rick Monday. You know, those are some guys that I remember watching growing up.
Some names, so for sure.
It was really neat. It was fun.
Did your family get to see your first game?
Yeah. Well, the first game was in Pittsburgh. So I got brought up and then didn't play for a while, which
right.
is one of the things. Tom Kelly was a teammate of mine with the Twins. And when Kelly would manage, if you remember, whenever a kid would get brought up, Kelly would get him in the game that day.
Yeah.
I remember this clearly, or for sure the next day. And I think that's so important, because you get brought up and you know, your eyes are popping out of your head. You don't know if you're playing or not. And then I sat on the bench for 10 days. Well, I don't care who you are, you kind of lose your skills a little bit.
Yep.
And then got thrown into a game where Tom would always put a guy in right away. And I just think that was really smart.
And you said Tom was a teammate of yours?
Tom was a teammate of mine in 1975, the year I was with the Twins. So I got brought up to the Cubs in 73 at the end of the year and played there. And then the next year I made the team, the big league team, out of spring training with the Cubs. And then hurt my knee, ended up having a knee operation. And then the following winter got traded to the Twins. I got traded to the Twins in the winter of 74, even up for a guy named Mike Adams in a trade that rocked the baseball world. Nobody ever heard either one of them.
Well, you're just one step ahead of me. My next question is going to be, you know, you made the club in 74 out of spring training, but then I didn't see anything for you from a stats perspective, you know, after mid-June. And you mentioned you had a knee injury.
Right, I had a knee operation, so I missed the whole rest of that season. And so it's in the fall, was in the Arizona Instructional League again, trying to rehab the knee. and then got traded.
What? Tell us about your 1975 season in Minnesota.
Well, 75 was, I was always just, John, hanging by my fingernails to stay in the big leagues. You know, from the time I got brought up till the end of 75, which was my last year, those 3 years, I was just hanging by my fingernails. And so you're the backup catcher, and the catcher's in, with the Twins, Glenn Borgman and Phil Roof.
Yep.
And Phil Roof, I, out of spring training, I did not make the team, so I got sent to Tacoma. And played about, on the road. We were on the road for the first, we opened up on the road, a two-week road trip. We used to go on these two-week road trips. And so I was on the road 2 weeks, and the last day of the road trip, I'm thinking, oh, great, we get to go home, and, you know, my wife's back in Tacoma. And that day, I got brought up to the Twins. So they said, Phil Roof got hurt, you're going to come temporarily, your wife stay in Tacoma. Well, it turned out to be, I was there for 2 months, and I lived at the Marriott Hotel right across from the ballpark there.
Okay.
And so I was on the road for 2.5 months.
Wow.
But still had an apartment at Tacoma. But it was fun. It was great. And on that team, we had good guys. And, you know, Carew was on that team, and Eric Soderholm, and Steve Braun, and Steve Bry.
Yeah.
Got Bly Levin. You know, Bly Levin was the best pitcher on that team, of course.
Which major league manager did you enjoy playing for the most, and which manager made the biggest impact on your career?
I think probably when I was brought up the first year, Whitey Lockman was the manager. Remember
mm-hmm.
Whitey Lockman?
Yep.
And Whitey, he was a little tough to get along with, at least from my side. So, and then the next year, Whitey was still the manager. And just as I hurt my knee, Jim Marshall, my manager in AAA, Whitey was fired, and Jim Marshall was made the manager of the Cubs. And that's right when I hurt my knee, and I often wish, gee, I wish I would have been around when Jim Marshall was a manager, because Jim knew I could play from playing for him in AAA, and
sure.
It would have gotten a little more playing time. So Jim was a good guy. And then Frank Willisy was the manager of the Twins. And
mm-hmm.
Frank's a good guy. I like Frank a lot.
Yeah, I did an interview with Frank, and Frank certainly likes to talk.
What's Frank doing these days?
You know, I don't know. I exchange emails with him on a regular basis. He answers some questions for me, and he seems to be traveling a lot, so he seems to be doing pretty good. And then, you know, he does some things with the Twins on the air with their TV broadcasts. During
oh, he
season.
Does? Okay, so he's yeah. still in Minnesota then.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
But I like Frank a lot. I didn't play very well for him, but I like him.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll if you have a chance to see any Twins broadcasts, and I kind of doubt you do up there, but, you know, he's on there on some of the post-game shows.
Okay, good. Well, if you ever talk to him, say hi.
I will.
Tom Lungstedt says hi.
Calvin Griffin on the team when you played in Minnesota. Tell us about your interaction with Calvin.
Yeah, that's, you're teeing it up for me right now. Calvin was really something. You know, I played with the Cubs, and they were real straight-laced, owned by T.K. Wrigley, the gum, you know,
sure.
people, and you never saw the Wrigleys at all, and they had a whole front office and kind of buttoned-up coat and tie people. And then I got to Minnesota, and you'd actually deal with Calvin, and I can remember I got traded in the winter, so the negotiating the contract for the spring of 1975, I was negotiating right with Calvin. And so I'll never forget sitting in his office. We didn't have agents at that time.
Right.
Or I didn't have an agent anyway. Sitting in Calvin's office at the old Met Stadium, and he had a big, you know, big desk and memorabilia all over the place, from the Washington Senators to the Twins, and, you know, it'd be like a museum. And behind him, he had a great big stuffed Marlin on the wall.
Uh-huh.
They had offered me $16,000, which was minimum salary. And I had made minimum salary the year before with the Cubs. So I went into Calvin and said, I think I deserve $16,500 more. And she said, no. And I said, why not? And he said, you're no damn good.
Thank you very much.
You're no damn goody. So, what do you say to that? Of course, I signed for $16,000. And then, so I didn't really have much interaction with Calvin, but I can remember staying at the darn Marriott Hotel. You know, it was right across the street from the, right across the parking lot from the old Met Stadium. So I didn't have a car there. I would walk to the ballpark each day and then walk back to the Marriott. Well, staying at the Marriott gets a little old, so I'll never forget one rainy day. Maybe it was an off day or we got rained out, I'm not sure. Rainy day, cold day in May, and I hitchhiked. I was going to hitchhike to Southdale and just have something to do
mm-hmm.
at the shopping center. And I got a ride down to, I don't know, France Avenue or something, and I remember standing with my arm out, and this great big black car pulls up real slowly, and it's drizzling, and the back window rolls down, and it's Calvin.
Yeah.
And the big leaguers don't hitchhike. And he rolled the window back up and left. He didn't pick me up.
Nice guy.
Well, it was just funny, so I kind of have that in my mind as a mantra that big leaguers don't hitchhike.
You played in a number of big league parks. What was your favorite, and what do you remember the most about playing at Met Stadium?
Met Stadium was fun. I thought it was when they built the dome. I thought, gee, what's wrong with Met Stadium? I like Met Stadium a lot, and became good friends with one of the Vikings, Rick Danmeyer, who was the kicker for the Vikings.
Yes.
So after I was done playing, I stayed in Minnesota. And it was a good football stadium, you know, those football games where you'd have your beard would be all full of ice and stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought Met Stadium was a great stadium. And Wrigley Field, of course, was fun. The old San Francisco stadium I liked. Kansas City had a beautiful, they were starting to build those new stadiums back then, which are now all being torn down.
The multi-purpose.
They kind of all looked alike. Remember Cincinnati and Philadelphia and what else? They were all kind of the same.
Yep. Big
old stadium. In Philadelphia, I remember out in the bullpen, they had, the wall was plexiglass. And so you'd sit behind, out in the left field, behind the left field fence. That's where the bullpen was. So the pitchers and catchers who aren't playing are out there. And we had plexiglass. And the first time we went in, it was great. It was just like you're practically, there's no screen in front of you. You watch the whole game. And then we came through, we must have come through Philadelphia again a couple months later. You couldn't see anything because the guys would lean back on their chair with their feet up on the plexiglass and their spikes scratched it all up. And so when the lights of the stadium were on, it would be like a prism coming through. You couldn't see a thing. So that's what I remember about Philadelphia. So there were some great... The most fun we had, John, was in the minor leagues, though.
Is that right?
You just have... You know, the big leagues are great. I mean, that's the place to be. But we had some fun in the minor. We used to have an old bus playing in the Texas League. I played for Midland, Texas, which is just out in the middle of Texas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Baked this bus, and we had furniture on the bus. There were no seats. It was all barca loungers and couches and stuff. And so we'd get on that bus, and you'd be sitting in an old barca lounger, and the guy next to you is sleeping on a couch. And you know how a bus has to stop at railroad tracks?
Yeah.
So we'd be driving across Wisconsin, and the busy would have to stop, and all the furniture would slide to the front. And the busy would gear up, and all the furniture would slide to the back. And I just picture ourselves sliding to and fro across Texas on the furniture bus.
Yeah, I don't think they'd allow that today.
Yeah, no. I don't think so at all. No, in fact, in Minnesota was great, though. I really liked it that the first couple months I stayed at the Marriott, didn't really know anybody, although one of my best friends from high school, Dave Beckstrom, was and still is a Lutheran pastor. He was a pastor at a church in Edina. So I would see Dave, and he had two boys, and I'd leave them tickets, you know,
mm-hmm.
So I have good memories of that. But then I went, after those 2 months, I went back to Tacoma, just for a couple weeks, and then got brought back up to Minnesota and finished the season with the Twins there.
You ended up walking away from the game after the 1975 season at the age of 26.
Yeah, I played that winter in Venezuela after the 75 season. Yeah. And then in the spring of 76, I had a contract sitting on my desk and decided, and it's not like you were making tons of money. Like, gee, today you couldn't walk away from it. But I had gone 3 years to Michigan, and I retired with the idea of going back and maybe going to law school. So I went back. I actually got a business degree from Minnesota. I finished up the 1 year at the University of Minnesota. So I have a degree in business from Minnesota, not from Michigan.
So you retired from baseball, on your own volition. There wasn't any injury or anything like that?
Yep, exactly. Wow. I didn't get released. I probably would have, eventually. But, I could have played again, I think. I just chose not to. I was just kind of on to the next thing.
Yeah. So what did you do after you left baseball?
I went back to school. So I finished that year of school and was living in Burnsville, Minnesota. And then with the intention maybe of doing something, law school, or I don't know. And I had a class from a person who was in the commercial real estate business and really, really liked it. And so when I graduated, I got into the real estate business in Minnesota and ended up being in the commercial real estate business for several years in the Twin Cities. And then realtor needs continuing education, so many hours of continuing ed every year.
Sure.
And one of my friends, co-workers, I was with a company called the Griffin Companies in Bloomington, which sold apartment buildings and office buildings and so on in the Twin Cities, and really liked that. And my friend went to a continuing ed program and came back at lunch, and I said, how was it? And he said, the guy was terrible. He couldn't speak. He didn't know what he was talking about. You could do this. I didn't know if he meant I was just as bad. So I thought, I could do that. I could talk about this. So I ended up doing a little speech on investing in real estate, and that was probably 1980. And I really liked it and turned out to be pretty good at it. So that's what I do full time. I have been for the last 30 years a professional speaker. I speak at conventions, and this year I'll do about 50 dates a year all over the country. And that's been a real, real, real good thing for me.
And it's from everything I've seen and read, you're really good at it.
Well, it's a good topic, and I can tell a few stories, and I know a little bit about how it works, and so it's good. It's just been good, and it allows me to live wherever I want to live. If I can get to an airport, I can work. So that's been a good thing.
So has retirement entered your thoughts?
No, I retire from what? I like what I do.
That's
and I can scale it up or scale it down, how many dates I accept.
Sure.
I have no intention of that. But I live in an area. We moved from the Twin Cities to Door County, Wisconsin, which is straight across from about 400 miles. I'm 400 miles east of you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on Lake Michigan in Green Bay, and it's just a real nice resort area. And in the winter like this, calms down to nobody's around. I'm sitting in my little office cottage in Ephraim, Wisconsin right now, looking out the window and haven't seen a person all day. So, it's kind of nice.
That is. Tom, I was able to contact you with the help of Doug Gladstone, who wrote a book called A Bitter Cup of Coffee back in 2010. And the book examines the plight of about 874 major leaguers who played between 1947 and 1979, but were not in the majors long enough to qualify for a pension. I think you're one of those players, Tom. Can you shed some light on that situation for us?
Yeah, I fit right into that. Back when I was playing, in order to qualify for the pension plan, you needed 4 years of major league service. If you didn't get 4 years, you didn't qualify. That was the deal, and which I did not get. And so that's fine. That was the deal back then, and that was 1975 was my last year. And baseball is, I have real good feelings about it, and loved, glad I did it. But it's, I was just on to another life and really didn't think or talk much about my baseball experience, certainly the business side of it. And then Doug called me one day, and he said, "Hey, Tom, do you know anything about this?" And I said, "No, what are you talking about?" And he was a driving force in campaigning, saying this isn't fair, because now, I guess beginning in 1980, once you have, I believe it's, do you know, is it 30 days, or it's a real short amount of time, you qualify for major league pension. And then, of course, any payments you get would be dependent on how long you played.
Sure.
But qualification, and it, part of it is it qualifies for health insurance and other things. It's not just a pension. And so he said, this isn't fair to the players who retired earlier than this. So he would, I've not met him, but I've talked to him on the phone, and I think he was really a driving force in this. And his book, I read his book and learned a lot. I didn't know much of what I read about. And so the bottom line is, he kind of won the battle with the help of other players, former players and so on. And so now they are doing some pension payments based on how many quarters of Major League service you have. And so I have 5 quarters. And so I got a check last year for $3,000, which is nice.
Yeah.
Oh, it's nice.
It's always nice.
And it was fun. It was actually great fun to get a check signed by the Commissioner of Baseball, and you kind of feel reconnected to baseball.
It's not gonna
make me rich, but I feel reconnected. And then part of this, that was supposed to just be a 2-year thing. Well, part of this recent negotiation they had when they signed a new basic agreement for 5 years, well, they extended that for 5 more years.
I didn't know too much about it either. I was doing some research on the internet for my website, and then ran across that book and exchanged emails with Doug a couple times. And so I'm hoping to set up an interview with him and kind of do a little more in-depth on it. But
As I said to him in an email, I just kind of lost connection with baseball pretty much completely. Did you read the book?
Not yet. I looked in our local library system, and they don't have it, so I'm going to have to purchase it.
The book's good. It's worth reading. You'll learn a lot.
Okay.
For sure, I learned a lot.
Okay. What, Tom, what do you enjoy doing in your spare time?
Oh, this is such a great resort area. I do some of the resort kind of things, you know, but what I've been doing for the last couple of years, we took apart an old 1895 log cabin, which was on the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and moved it to 35 acres of woods that we have here, and are rebuilding it. So we put together this old log cabin, and it's turning out great. It's a big job, but it's a lot of fun. So that's really taking up my time.
Wow.
We're almost done with it now. But it still involves landscaping and painting and putting this all together. You mark when you take this old building apart, you mark each corner and each piece, you know, and tab A goes in slot B, and you truck it over here and put it back together. And it's just like Lincoln Logs. Remember playing with Lincoln Logs?
Yeah.
And it's absolutely unbelievable, John, how this cabin was built totally by hand. You know, there were no power tools.
Yep.
How perfectly these corners fit together.
That is pretty amazing what they could do in the old days with that kind of construction.
The craftsmanship is unbelievable. So that's been a real fun thing. So if you ever come over to Door County, call me. I'll give you a tour of the 1895 log cabin.
That would be cool. My wife's from Michigan and from Saginaw, and so we drive up through the UP quite a bit. So it's an interesting area.
It's a lot of fun.
So, do you golf? Do anything like that?
No, I'm not a golfer. I have 3 brothers, and my dad was a really good golfer, and all my brothers have the golfing gene, and I didn't get it. It's boring to me.
Uh-huh.
I go out with my brothers, and they had just all fired up, and so I don't know. I don't know if something I missed on that.
Do you follow baseball today?
I do a little bit. The Cubs, we get a lot of Cubs. The Brewers, you know, the Brewers have been good the last couple of years, so yeah. I'm in Wisconsin and get a lot of Brewers news. So you can, and I used to follow a lot guys that I knew, and as time goes by, they're certainly not playing anymore, but not managing. It was fun to see Bert go into the Hall of Fame, which is long overdue. Even Bert Blyleven was one of the best pitcher I ever caught. He had the best curveball, and he had a fastball that was good. And, you know, Fergie was, of course, a Hall of Fame pitcher, and he was good. But Fergie was more of a finesse pitcher, where Blyleven had a curveball that you could barely catch, let alone hit it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, Tom, we thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, John.
Any final thoughts for your Twins fans back here in Minneapolis?
No, but I'd like, hello to everybody. If anybody ever heard of me, they must really be baseball fans. But I've heard the new stadium is great.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I've not seen it. I've seen it on TV. But I've just heard how fabulous it is. So I have to get back and see that. And I'd love to see some of my old teammates. So I'll be interested and fun to go to your website and hear some of the interviews you've done with some of the guys I played with. I know you did Steve Braun.
Yeah.
And Glenn Borgman. Of course, Glenn and I were the catchers in 75.
Yeah.
With Phil Roof. And so that'll be fun.
Yeah, well, I hope you get a chance to do that.
So you're doing good work. Tell me, now, how did you get to be such a Twins fan? Did you grow up in Twinsville?
I grew up in Taylor's Falls, which is about 70 miles north on the St. Croix River there, and grew up on a farm, and so there wasn't a whole lot to do. I listened to baseball. You know, I started following baseball in 57 when since the Twins weren't there, the Braves were the closest team, and so they beat the Yankees, and I always hated the Yankees, and so that was a great thing for me, and from then, you know, got into collecting baseball cards, and, you know, I've just followed the Twins ever since they moved to Minnesota.
Well, speaking of baseball cards, I think there are people who want to collect every player who ever played for the Twins, or
yep.
every player who ever played for the Cubs, you know,
yep.
and so I get two or three autograph requests a week sent to this little village that I have here that I'm in York County. But I just walked in this morning before you called, and a guy sent me a baseball card, and it's a kid. I think he's an 11-year-old kid, typewritten envelope. Tom Lundstedt came right to my office here, and he has two baseball cards, and he sends me a letter, a typewritten letter, and the first line typewritten says, "Dear," and then he has a blank. And in the blank, in pencil, he fills out Tom. And the first typewritten sentence says, "You were my favorite player of all time."
Oh.
I think I'm going to write back saying you should get a word processor.
And, you know, and I collect baseball cards. Yeah, I try to collect autographs. I'm trying to get an autograph card from every Twins player, and I haven't done too much with it over the last year or two, but it's fun to do and to send these cards out, and some of them are hard to find, and then some of them you never get back, and so that's kind of frustrating, but...
By mail, all kinds of fun people. A guy sent me a card last summer. He said, "Oh, please sign this. I really like your following your career." Well, the card wasn't me. So it was somebody else. So I sent it back saying, "No, I'm sorry, this is not me." So he sends back another letter. He says, "Tom, I'm so embarrassed. You know, I'm really, really embarrassed. I just messed up. Here, please sign this card." Well, the second card wasn't me. So I wrote back saying, "Strike two."
Oh, wow.
You sent me two different cards that weren't me.
Well, you know, it's hard to find cards of you, Tom.
Well, I know it. The only card I have actually is that rookie card.
Uh-huh.
When I got traded right at the time they were doing baseball cards. So I don't have a baseball
Yeah.
Only with the Cubs. But people find all these pictures on the internet. You know, the internet's an amazing thing.
It is. It is.
Of what's out there.
I wanted a picture for my interview with you to put on the site. And it's hard to find pictures that I thought were good enough to use. And I finally ran across one of you as a Cub that I really like. And so I'll probably be using that one. But every once in a while I get in touch with the Twins and they give me some pictures. But they get a little...
There are some old pictures. When we're done, I think I might even have one I'll send to you.
Okay.